part-time fanboy.
Part-time fanboy doing my thing.
More powerful than a locomotive.
I'm gonna do it part. I'm gonna do it part-time. I'm gonna do it part. I'm gonna do it part-time. Fanboy.com.
All right, so this is Part-Time Fanboy, and I am Christian Horn, and I am on the line with Doctor Who scholar Barry Negrin.
Good morning, Christian.
Good morning, and he is on the phone with us from luxurious Club Med. He is on vacation, so thank you for joining us on your vacation.
You know, I'm on vacation, but the podcast never rests.
The show must go on, as they say.
That's right.
Whatchamacallit. And we are here to discuss the 2016 Doctor Who Christmas special, The Return of Dr. Mysterio, correct?
That's it.
Yeah, I got it right. Cool. So it's really funny because, first of all, this was a Doctor Who episode that was kind of made for me, I think. I was
thinking that as I watched it.
Yeah, I was very much watching it. Well, I'd seen the trailers, and the trailers kind of made it a little silly, which it is. It is a bit of a silly episode, but, I did a drawing a long time ago during the Tenant years, and I posted it up on DeviantArt when I had a DeviantArt account, and of basically the Tenant Superman sort of crossover that that I would have loved to see back then, you know what I mean? And apparently...
I think you just saw it.
Yeah, I think I just saw it. Apparently, great minds think alike. And I know other artists who have done the same sort of things that I've seen after I did mine. But it's just really great to see that, that my mind is sort of on the same wavelength as Stephen Moffat to a certain extent.
That might be a little frightening to think about.
The guy is an amazing writer, despite whatever we think of what's been going on with Who for sort of the past couple of years, he has had some great writing moments, and he does work on Sherlock, and he did give us Jekyll, that BBC series. And
I haven't seen it.
Oh, yeah. You should see if you can find that. It's amazing. And then he did a show called Skins, right, which was on Netflix. I don't know if it still is, but I've been wanting to watch that. But that's sort of a teen drama show. So, but anyway, we finally got the sort of Doctor Superman crossover that I've been wanting to see. And, I have to say I was pleasantly surprised. This episode really made me, because it's been a while since the last Who. And you sort of...
Last episode was the last Christmas episode.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that's right. You're absolutely right. So it's been a year. And, the thing is... I can certainly take the new Who for granted. And this episode, because I think I've said in the past about Moffat's series, to me, they've been really hit or miss. And in particular, I think the first season of the new Doctor, the current Doctor, kind of left me wanting a little bit. And but this episode, really reminded me of why I love Doctor Who and how enjoyable it is and how much I missed. And it also got my kid jazzed to watch more Doctor Who. So, I have to say I had a really great time watching this despite, not because of all the superhero stuff, because, he definitely does a lot of fun stuff with sort of the Superman the Superman character or stand-in, the ghost. But I have to say it's got me enthusiastic for next year, and which will kind of be a little bittersweet because for all my complaints about Moffat, I have really enjoyed a lot of the stuff that he's done for the Doctor. So, you know, it'll be interesting. But what were some of your thoughts?
So, you know, I'm generally not a big fan of the Christmas specials anyway.
Yeah.
Because they're too fluffy and too light. And I, you know, since I've been watching this show for 40 years or so, I tend to prefer the darker episodes. I mean, not the brooding ones per se, but the ones where the aliens are truly terrifying, the ones where there's a lot of continuity thrown back to earlier episodes and earlier Doctors. So this one sort of left me lacking. I didn't think it was nearly as strong as the 2015 Christmas episode, The Husbands of River Song. I mean, I really enjoyed the River Song character,
yeah.
Even though that there was like a lot of silliness in that. There was also a lot of menace too. I mean, you know, she had this crazy husband, King Hydroflex, and that whole storyline was a bit nuts, but you know, he was kind of terrifying.
Yeah.
And I enjoy that. So in this episode, instead, you have brains with eyeballs,
yeah.
Which I thought was just a little bit weak. And I thought that there was so much of a hat tip to the Christopher Reeve's Superman story, especially from the first movie, that it became almost plagiaristic, you know, from the, what they went, when he showed up on the roof of her building with the picnic basket, I was like, oh, come on, write something original. I mean, I understand that. And there were some clever nods. I will give you that. Like, for example, at the end of the press conference, when Mr. Brock says, do you have any further questions? I refer to you at either Miss Siegel or Miss Schuster. That was very funny to me.
Yeah.
Because they were, of course, the creators of Superman. And there were some other little clever bits in there, like the fact that even if they referred to the company as Harmony Shoal, you know, that's sort of a clever twist on River Song or Melody Pond. You know, so that was nice. And, you know, but before I also say what my favorite thing was, let's recap the story a little bit. So you have the dot. Do you want to take that away or shall I?
Well, I mean, it starts off, you know, basically, there's a lot of things that I did like being, you know, I did really like all the references to the Christopher Reeve Superman. I did really like all the sort of like little bits that he stuck in there as far as like references to comic books, to comics. Obviously, for somebody like me who has adored and loved Superman and just comic books in general, this was kind of a fun episode to, you know, have the references dropped in and out. But I mean, the
sure.
basics
sure.
of the story are that the Doctor accidentally creates a superhero. Because way back in the, I can't remember, was it the 80s?
It was 24 years prior to today.
Oh,
so,
okay.
What is that? 1992.
Yeah,
right?
1992. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And this little boy named Grant, who has the most awesome room in the world. It almost looks like my room as an adult right now, my office space as an adult right now. No kid had a room like that. Like there were all these like custom, you know, comic book cover things and like, you know, but it was just really great because he sort of is woken up by the Doctor kind of like hanging outside of his window, like, and asking for help, right? And it's like a really great moment because the kid sort of is like, what are you doing? And, you know, he's kind of a cute kid and he wears glasses and he's like, what are you doing outside of my window? And the Doctor's like, I need help. Let me in. And so then the kid goes and runs to get his parents. And then he comes back and he's like, oh, you're expected. And he lets the Doctor in and the Doctor's like, what do you mean expected? And he's like, oh, what's the date? Oh, December 24th or 25th or whatever. And then the Doctor realizes that the kid thinks he's Santa Claus. And so the Doctor is building.
Which for some of us, he is.
Yeah, that's true. And so the Doctor is building a device on the roof of this little kid's building in, it is New York City, right? It's supposed to be New York City. It's not some fictional city. And so,
although it was shot mostly in Bulgaria.
Well, that's funny. But so the kid goes upstairs with the doctor, and the doctor's building a device, and he's talking to the kid, and the kid is definitely like this neurotic sort of like jumpy, like little worrier kid, you know, because he keeps asking him questions, and he keeps like, what are you doing? And the little kid has a cold, and there's a little bit where, you know, the doctor is sort of like, I'm the doctor. And the kid's like, which doctor? And he's like, I'm the doctor. And he's like, doctor, you know, doctor what? Or like doctor who? Or like something like that. And the doctor has the power source to this device. What's the device for? I can't remember right now. It's
early. It was to he was trying to fix the many time distortions that are rampant throughout New York, which was a nice throwback to the Angels Take Manhattan story.
Ah, okay.
There were temporal distortions caused by the Angels and also by Amy and Rory throwing themselves off the building.
Sure. Okay. Yeah. So basically, he's building this device, and he pulls out the power source. And the power source, again, there's a lot of like little nerd comic things. First of all, when he pulls it out, it looks like a 20-sided die from Dungeons and Dragons. I was like, if that's not a 20-sided die, I don't know what the hell that is. A little glowing red 20-sided die. And then the next thing, he starts to explain that, I forget the exact explanation, but it has something to do with a white dwarf star. Like out in the galaxy in the cosmos, and this little device will give you, or is able to, if used correctly, gives the user their most desired dream.
What they want and need most.
Yeah, what they want and need most in the whole universe, if used correctly. Which is funny because I'm looking at this article right now. I guess it's called Inverse.com, and it's like all the little sort of Easter eggs in that Doctor Who episode for comic fans, and they missed this one. But he talks about a white dwarf star, and the white dwarf star, if you remember from Legends of Tomorrow or White Dwarf or DC comic fans, is the thing that sort of gives the Atom from the comics his powers, his original powers, which is to shrink and grow and stuff like that. So that's like one of the very sort of obscure, like nerd things that they put in this episode. But anyway, the doctor's like, here, kid, hold this, which, you know, you don't give. I forget how old the kid is. He looks like he's like maybe 8 to 10.
Somewhere. Nine.
Yeah, so like 9, right? Actually, Wikipedia, it says 8-year-old. But in any case, you know, because Wikipedia knows everything. In any case, he gives the kid this thing, and the kid's got a cold. And in the course of events, the kid swallows it because he thinks it's medicine, because he's like, well, you said you were a doctor and you gave me this
thing. And he also gave him a glass of water,
too.
Yeah,
he gave him a glass of water. And he's like, can I have a cold? And so in the turn of events that follows, the kid develop superpowers because he is a little comic book nerd, which we see in his room. He has posters of comics everywhere. He had a Superman comic on his bedside, which also featured the art of, I believe it's Superman number 7 or 8, and it features the art and writing of John Byrne, who was the reason why I particularly really started devouring Superman comics in the 80s, because John Byrne was and kind of still is one of my favorite comic book artists of all time. So there was a lot of like nerd talk on John Byrne fan Facebook pages, like, oh my God, did you see the latest Doctor Who episode? He opens it up and he's like, he's reading a John Byrne comic book. So yeah, there were a lot of people freaking out about that, myself included. When I saw it, I was like, get the hell out of here. Of all the Superman comics that they could have picked, they picked a John Byrne Superman. So I wonder if Stephen Moffat was reading that stuff when he was a kid, which I have a feeling he probably was. And maybe he's a big fan of John Byrne, who knows? But yeah, there's like a lot of, and so then they cut to sort of the future, or our time, and you come to discover that this kid has become an actual real-life superhero, which the
doctor... Well, we did visit him briefly in high school.
Oh, that's
when he's
true.
About 14 or 15.
Yeah.
And he's having a tough time negotiating his powers.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, that bit comes a bit later, but you do skip ahead to the current timeline where there is a real live superhero in New York and the doctor is not having any of it because he doesn't think that it's a good idea that this kid whose name is Grant does superhero stuff and he's against it. And so he's like, you were supposed, because when Grant is 8 years old as a boy, he promises the doctor to never use his powers because he doesn't want the kid to get into any trouble.
But of course, you know, no kid is going to have powers and not use it.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. But they also, you know, which I think Smallville kind of touched on when it was on, they do visit him when he's sort of like a teen or a preteen boy, and he's having problems with his powers because he can't shut off his X-ray vision. And it sort of like explains like why he keeps looking down and won't look at anybody because he's sort of trapped in a world, a hellish world of nudity or something, as he puts it. There's a really nice turn of phrase there, you know. And so like the girls kind of laugh at him. Everyone thinks he's a nerd because he can't look anybody in the eye. And he's like, basically, you know, mortified at the powers that he's been given. So there's a lot of
and the one that he's sweet on, though, Lucy, you know, he ends up levitating a little bit in a more adolescent joke than a kid joke.
Yeah. Exactly. I mean, they would do that sort of thing on Smallville, like every once in a while, where he would have these awkward sort of like, you know, obviously, like there's a big episode where Clark discovers his heat vision, and it's sort of like anytime he gets like sexually aroused, and that's why he likes his heat vision gets like activated. It's actually a really clever episode. You know, he starts, I guess it's, you know, supposed to be like, oh, puberty or whatever, sort of like kicking in. And it's kind of a funny take on that. But, you know, this episode is just chock full of all that sort of like, even the bit, like, I love, like, the bit that had me dying was when he sneaks into Grant's room and he's waiting for him to come back and like, or he's like talking to Grant and he's reading that very same Superman comic book and he sort of draws glasses on Clark Kent and he's like, wait, he's like, did you notice? And the kid's
same
like,
same guy. Yeah, nobody like, noticed that.
Yeah,
right.
He's like, did you notice? And he shows him the picture of Clark Kent with the glasses. And he says to the kid, and then he goes, look at this face. And the kid's like, okay. And he goes, now look at this face. And it's like Superman. And he goes, look back and forth. And then he shows a picture of like Superman with the glasses drawn. He's like, did you notice? And the kid's like, notice what? And the guy's like, he's like, Clark Kent, Superman. They're the same person. And the kid's like, come on,
everybody knows that.
Yeah. And he's like, what? Everybody knows that? I thought that was like just an adorable bit. Like and he goes, Lois Lane doesn't know that. And I just thought that was a great, you know, and there's all these like little Superman bits that for somebody like me, I just adored. Like Lucy's married name, the last name is Lombard. And I believe that, Lombard is the name of the bully that actually taunts Superman in the office. He's like, Steve Lombard. And he is the dude that is sort of like the big macho, you know, I think he's in charge of the sports column. And he is sort of like the big muscular macho dude that loves making like Clark Kent's life hell. So it's really,
this is from the comic books.
Yeah, this is from the comic books. So Steve Lombard is, he's the bully that that will make Clark's life miserable, and then Clark will always get back at him with like using super breath or like his superpowers and tricks, like using like hidden his abilities in secret to sort of like torture Steve Lombard back. So it's just a really good, it's an interesting callback because, you know, the fact that Lucy, right, is her name. Lucy's character married the guy who in the comics makes Superman's life miserable is just really, really funny because, so it's, there's a lot of really great stuff like that. And, you know, I also thought like the, because what you end up finding out is that there's a plot in New York City where these aliens that are sort of like living brains with eyes are trying to take over the world. And Lucy, who is a journalist, and also Grant, sort of like lifelong crush, is investigating, is looking into the invasion, and they are sort of like brains with eyeballs that will take over human bodies by sort of cutting the head open and planting themselves inside. And I thought that the brain aliens were a really good sort of callback to Brainiac, which is, you know, one of Superman's, like, other than Lex Luthor, one of Superman's greatest villains.
Right, but wasn't Brainiac an android?
Brainiac is, it depends on which version, you know, you're reading. Brainiac has always sort of been an alien, and he's from a different planet, and he collects cities, like bottled cities, and knowledge from planets and stuff like that. So what he'll do is he'll show up on a planet and shrink the city and put it in a bottle. This is from the Golden Age, like the 50s. And then he'll capture it along with all its inhabitants and keep them captive and then go on to another world and do the same thing. Later on, he would sort of become a robot that would destroy worlds and an alien that was an android, like lots of different versions again. And what he would do is either destroy worlds or capture cities and, again, for all the knowledge of that civilization. So he would destroy the civilization but keep their knowledge. There's a lot of different ways. But either way, you know, the name is Brainiac. And, you know, they have these little brains trying to take over the world. So I thought that was kind of like another really neat sort of callback to Superman. So, I mean, this episode is chock full of that kind of stuff. So it was basically like tailor-made for somebody like me.
Sure.
Yeah, I absolutely loved it. But I mean, other than that, you know, I understand that you sort of like the darker turns. And I do, too. I really like sort of like the intense episodes. But for me, this was just really filled with a lot of, you know, really neat humorous bits and, you know, really great moments where the Doctor is sort of out of his comfort zone, doesn't really know what's going on. Why is this happening?
Well, remember, he's come, he's showing up here directly after the end of his 24-year date with River Song.
Yeah.
It's very clear that he's just come from that. She's just, you know, gone off to meet her fate in the library, because he says a lot of things like, you know, everything ends, and
yeah,
he starts off kind of dark, and, you know, he's kind of bummed out. This was a, you know, a woman who was his equal in many ways, instead of your typical bit of earth fluff who's like 22 years old and eye candy and an idiot. You know, who eventually grows into the role of decent companion. I'm not naming names.
Oh, jeez.
But, you know, here you have this woman who's sort of part-time lord herself. She's in her 200s. She's smart as hell. She's kind of a villain a little bit. I mean, she's a thief like he is.
Yeah.
And, you know, she's gone now, and that's it. And he's devastated. And, you know, that comes across a bit in the beginning of the episode. And one thing I really enjoyed about this episode was that who is his companion on this adventure is Nardole.
Yeah.
We met on the last Christmas episode. And now he's not, first of all, he's a he. Second of all, he's not that attractive.
Yeah.
Third of all, he's not even human. He's an alien.
Yeah.
So you've got this guy that you know from many podcasts with me and probably many more emails and such. I always complain that he's always picking up these cute little Earth girls, which, of course, who can blame him? But it would be refreshing to see somebody who's not, doesn't fit that mold. And yeah, here you have Nardole. And the best part about the Nardole character, I think, in this episode is that, you know, he was kind of a bumbling moron a year ago in The Husbands of River Song. But now he's piloting the TARDIS. You know, he's sort of schooling the Doctor on Time Lord ethos. You know, he reminds the Doctor that, oh, you know, the Time Lord promised not to interfere in the affairs of other planets.
Yeah, yeah.
Which it which was mentioned, I mean, in the fourth Doctor stories, State of Decay, for example, and that actually was the main reason why the second Doctor was imprisoned on Earth and forced to regenerate into John Pertwee because, you know, he was interfering too much. He was breaking the Time Lord code. So that's, you know, that's a nice throwback to that.
Yeah.
And, you know, so there was some nice Nardole moments there.
Yeah.
And, you know, and of course he's still not invincible. Like, so when they're stuck up on a spaceship that's about to crash into Earth, he's truly terrified.
Yeah.
As he should be.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. I actually really like Nardole too. I it's funny because, I mean, I think we've talked about this during the Amy Pond years, where I was like, get rid of Amy Pond and, you know, have the boyfriend, Rory, you know, stick around, because I really do think, like, it wouldn't be terrible for the Doctor to have, I mean, he's had two companions in the past, especially in the beginning, right? Why not have a male companion stick around as well? You know, he's had Captain Jack, you know, tag along on adventures. And I thought Nardole was really great bit of sort of like comic relief to the episode as well. I mean, Peter Capaldi always does a great job with the comedy, always does a great job with sort of like the, you know, flustered, like, what is going on here? But it's always really great to have a character around that sort of is able to put the Doctor in his place or remind him like what he's doing wrong or kind of tease him a bit. And Nardole kind of filled that role as well. And I agree with you that it's really great to see somebody who is not, you know, super beautiful or whatever, you know, super attractive on the show as well. I mean, you know, there's some people that would say, and I disagree with them, I think Peter Capaldi's actually kind of like a handsome, you know, man, but I, you know, there's people that would say that, you know, Peter Capaldi himself isn't necessarily eye candy. So you do need that sort of slot to get like some viewers interested, but I thought it was kind of refreshing to have them both, you know, there. And as you can see, you can always have the guest stars be sort of the eye candy, because Lucy herself and you know, the ghost,
she was quite hot. Yeah.
I mean, they were both very attractive people. First of all, speaking of Grant, the ghost, or this actor Justin Chatwin, did they go back in the TARDIS and just get Michael J. Fox, like from like 1985? Because this guy was like absolutely, like, he was like a Michael J. Fox clone. I mean, even sort of the hair, what they did with his hair, I was like, this guy is like Michael J. Fox through and through, the voice and everything. Like, I was like, wow. I mean, maybe not exact. I mean, obviously that's an exaggeration. But for me, when I was watching this guy, he reminded me a lot of sort of a combination of Michael J. Fox and the guy who was on the Young Indiana Jones Adventures, which I cannot remember his name. I got to remember he was in another movie called, I'm looking it up. Young Indiana Jones. Let's find out. His name is, here it comes. Here comes the internet. Sean Patrick Flannery. Okay, yeah. So to me, this guy, Justin Chatwin, is a clone of Michael J. Fox and Sean Patrick Flannery. Jesus, I got to get that right. Sean Patrick Flannery. So, I mean, I was very sort of taken aback by this actor who was playing the ghost, because I thought he was really good. He had pretty good comic timing, and he reminded me of Michael J. Fox in his youth. So I have a feeling that we're going to be seeing a lot more of this guy, because I was just like, whoa, like, if they're going to recast like Michael J. Fox roles, like, this is the guy, you know?
Right.
Did you get that?
No, I definitely he had the hair. I even thought that his black and white check shirt was sort of reminiscent of a lot of the shirts that Marty McFly was wearing in Back to the Future.
Yeah. I wonder if they were sort of calling back to that. I mean, I don't know. Or maybe Stephen Moffat saw the resemblance and was like, let's play with that. The things that I thought were, well, first of all, I really liked the actress that played Lucy, who is British as well, and did a really great American accent.
She did a nice American accent, way better than... you know, Nicola Bryant did as Perry back in her day, but,
Yeah.
So apparently it can be done.
Yeah. But I thought it was really funny that Grant, or the ghost, you know, the bits where he grows up and he sort of becomes nanny to Lucy's baby. Like, at first I was kind of like, why is he sort of, you know, obviously being the Clark Kent character, a nanny? And then I was like, oh, it kind of makes perfect sense. It's because, you know, this Superman is sort of like the babysitter for the whole planet, right? Like, I mean, Superman is sort of the planet Earth's nanny. He's the rescuer. He's the caretaker. He's the one that is sort of taking care of all of us. And now in this sort of iteration, this version, he in his daily life is, you know, his regular quote unquote secret identity is, taking care of effectively, you know, Lois Lane's baby. So I just thought that was some really interesting stuff there too. Although
freeing
I thought, what's that?
Freeing her up to be able to go date other men.
Yeah.
Thereby enabling the doctor to say to him, thank you, universe, for showing me I'm not the worst person dating in the world.
Yeah. Well, I also love the bit where the doctor is like, you're going about this the complete wrong way. Like, the way that you're approaching this is completely idiotic, you know, which made me laugh as well. I mean, there's a lot of really good moments, but, you know, the basics of the plot are basically that there's a Superman character, there's a Lois Lane character. Lois Lane is investigating an alien invasion, and basically, Clark Kent is Lois Lane's nanny, and he is keeping an eye out on her because he's had this huge crush on her since high school that he's never been able to, because of his low self-esteem, never been able to sort of like pursue, you know. So he would rather be closer to her and help her take care of her child by another man who was his best friend at one point, than sort of break down the walls and actually become her boyfriend or whatever, you know, because he's terrified of maybe what being rejected by her.
I guess.
Yeah. I mean, they don't really.
He's already seen her naked 1,000 times. So.
I guess. Yeah. He's seen everybody naked as a teenager, which is kind of messed up in a way. But yeah. In the end, I mean, I thought it was a really fun episode. Is it sort of like one of the greatest Christmas episodes ever? I mean, I wouldn't say so. But for me, for somebody who's dreamed of seeing, and I still would love to see like DC Comics, and I think IDW has the license for a Doctor Who. I would still love to see like a teaming up of Superman and the Doctor in the comic books. I think it's a great opportunity. And it's really funny because when I posted my drawing like years ago on DeviantArt, one of the responses I got back to it was a dude who drew like a little comic strip of, you know, they never took advantage of taking the opportunity of like having Grant sort of like run into the TARDIS like it was a phone booth and like change into a superhero outfit and come out.
That would have been funny.
Yeah. So there were definitely a couple of missed opportunities there, but you know, all they had was like a little over an hour to fill the time. But all in all, you know, I thought it was a really fun episode.
It was fun. You know, it was, I think there were some just, I don't think necessarily the story came together that all well. But I mean, I thought that the acting was fine. I thought the cast was adorable. You know, I love Peter Capaldi. You know, I just thought that there were some loose ends about the aliens, and you know, the science fiction aspect of it left me a bit wanting. But
yeah,
you know, Look, it's been a year since we've seen any Doctor Who at all, so I'll take what I can get.
Yeah, it's really funny because I think that the sort of alien story and the alien invasion story really did take a backseat to Stephen Moffat's, you know, desire to sort of like play with the Superman thing. It's almost like the alien invasion was kind of like secondary in there to sort of have something that both the heroes could do. You know what I mean? And you know, it plays like that. You're right. It does play clumsily. They do kind of like, I mean, there's nothing sort of like new and super innovative about these aliens. There's nothing like really deep to them. They're just sort of like a plot device, you know, and they're sort of just like the sort of, the evil villain sort of like twirling its mustache. There's no real depth to them either, or depth to their story. I mean, I think you're right about that. And I think you're right about that sort of being played out a bit clumsily. But I think that, you know, if you look at the episode and you look at what Moffat was trying to do, which again is obviously, hey, it's Superman, wink, wink, you know, hey, it's the Doctor. I think it's really a really successful episode. And I think that a lot of these Christmas episodes, most of them are sort of made to give you the warm and fuzzies anyway. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I mean, it's true. I mean, there have been a lot of dark and heartbreaking episodes, especially last season, right? You know, with Clara dying and and you see River Song about to buy it. That this is kind of a palate cleanser.
Yeah. It's really funny because especially when you sort of look at the trailer that they gave us and you know what's coming, you know, that Stephen Moffat is going to leave, it seems like they're setting it up for some darker times ahead. It looks like the new season is going to be kind of like, you know, a bit of a, you know, kick in the nuts, if I must say.
Right.
Although, I have to say that I do really like, at first when I saw the new companion, I was like, I don't know. But now after seeing the trailer and then seeing the little bit that they released where he's like, I don't know if you saw that, where he's like explaining the Daleks to her.
Right.
Or they're on the run from the Daleks. That, you know, I think that their chemistry is really going to pay off.
Well, she definitely has the running down.
Yeah. Well, you know, everybody's got to have that. I think to be on on Doctor Who, you really have to sort of work on your cardio a lot, probably be running a lot. But, you know, I really think that this Christmas episode was sort of successful for me, and I said a little earlier, in reminding me of why I watch this show. You know what I mean? I watch it to have fun. I watch it because of the sci-fi aspects. I watch it, you know, because of sort of the humor, and there was a lot of that in there. I feel like it was really successful in sort of like in being the episode that sort of pokes its head out and is like, hey, everybody, you know, we're still here. We've been gone a while, but this is kind of why you like us, and, you know, and we're getting ready for another season, which may be different in tone from this, but I think that it definitely was the sort of thing that was like, oh, you know, it's kind of cheeky fun. It can be serious at times. It can have like sad moments and fun moments. And it's kind of like why I, you know, as a member of the sort of crowd that has only really been exposed mostly to the new Doctor Who, you know, I've watched the older episodes, why we sort of like love this series. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because you like grumpy, not fun Doctor. Or
I mean, that's why I know you're like, why Capaldi's first season left a little to be desired. I really enjoyed it because he was just so pissed off and angry and Scottish. And I was like,
yeah, I think
it's so refreshing.
I think that I think that that sort of characterization can only go so far, because I think that even when you're around a pissed off and grumpy person for a long time, you do warm up to them a bit. You know what I mean? You do.
Yeah.
You sort
of
become friendly with them. They can be maybe sort of a jerk, and they would warm up to you. You know, I mean, I'm sure we've all had relatives and, you know, uncles, aunts, you know, whatever, friends who are
I might be that relative.
You might be. And, you know, as they sort of grow to, you know, as you're sort of like around that person longer, they warm up to you, you warm up to them. And otherwise you would just not hang around that person. You would just be like, this guy's an ass. Why do I want to?
Right.
I think you can only carry that so far. And I think even the older doctors who, you know, I jokingly are like, oh, they didn't joke around or they weren't fun. Even the sort of like grumpier ones, there's definitely moments of like warmth and things that shine through that, or bits of personality that they become endearing in their own way. You know what I mean? So I think that first season for Capaldi, there was a little bit of stumbling around story-wise is what I mean. Because, you know, I could take angry Capaldi all day long. I mean, I've seen that British show that he was on, and he's just a genius. Yeah, the thick of it, yeah. And he's brilliant. He's a genius, you know. So I could take, you know, grumpy Capaldi all day long, but I think it was more a function of story. And, you know, you could tell when Stephen Moffat's distracted. And I don't think that he was distracted during this episode, but I think he was trying to balance the sort of hey, everybody, we're sort of teasing superheroes this episode, ha ha, you know, with the there's an alien invasion going on. So that sort of would be my little gripe, which I didn't really have a gripe with. I thought it was fun all around, you know.
I gotcha.
Yeah, yeah. So, what are some of your other thoughts? I mean,
you know, there was some other nice little fan service for Doctor Who fans, where, you know, at the end when the big reveal occurs and Unit shows up, that's nice, and then the chief of the squad of Unit drops down on the Harmony Shoal building, that you hear him say, I'm putting a call into Osgood. And that was nice. That was nice.
Yeah.
Touch. You know, overall, I thought it was there were some great dialogue points along the way. You know, one of them, where the doctor and Lucy are both spying on Harmony Shoal, says, don't worry, I'm an intruder too.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was, you know, that's classic, and the delivery was so great. He says, but he brought sushi with him. He says, but I've got snacks. I'm a professional.
Yeah.
That's really good stuff. You know, and there was, I can't remember what plot line, what he was pointing to, but the doctor says, I'm the doctor, and even I think it's insane.
Yeah, yeah.
One thing I think it was something Grant was going to do. And, you know, that's just, it was really nice. It was really nice coloring to his character and to the show in general. But, you know, overall, I don't really have that much else to say about it because it was a fluff piece. Yes, it was an homage to Superman and comic books, but I'm not in it for that. I'm in it for the Doctor.
Yeah, but the Doctor can be seen as very much a superheroic character in and of himself.
Sure.
I mean, he definitely is sort of obviously built out of sci-fi, but he is sort of like the superhero that shows up and saves everyone, right? He just doesn't wear tights or a costume.
No.
Or, you know.
Well, not as such.
Well, it's very interesting because, you know, some of the interstitials or the interviews that they show on BBC America, you know, they interviewed the guy that plays Grant. And it was interesting because he was like, apparently, you know, Stephen Moffat sort of wanted to strike a balance between the actor and Stephen Moffat wanted to strike a balance between what Christopher Reeve did with Superman and Michael Keaton did with Batman. And it's really funny because I really thought that the ghost outfit looked dopey as hell. I was like, that just looks dumb. And I didn't like the mask or anything like that. But, you know, the voice thing was really clever, too. The sort of like, because that's something that just harkens back to even the early days of like the Superman radio show where, you know, like on as Clark Kent, he would be like, gee, Mr. White, blah, 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 blah. And then he'd be like, this is a job for Superman. You know, he would like, you know, and it's funny because a lot of people think that like Michael Keaton was sort of the first person to do that. But no, it does go back to the Superman radio show where it's like Superman is deeper and Clark Kent is like, hey, everybody, you know. So I just, you know, for somebody like me who, you know, I definitely appreciate the Doctor Who stuff, but it's really neat to see sort of how a science fiction sort of super intelligent superhero would line up with sort of the typical, you know, basically the icon of sort of superheroics, you know, super strength, X-ray vision and stuff like that. For me, it would have been more interesting a bit if they had sort of been equals as opposed to, say, the Doctor being the one that kind of created him or the one that, you know, sort of tutors him a little bit, you know, in his teenage years, because it's obvious that, you know, the Doctor is sort of the sort of superior one, you know, in this episode where it's like the Doctor is the one, you know, I mean, the Ghost is like trying to justify what he does to the Doctor. It's sort of like almost like a kid justifying to his parent, you know, why he wants to do what he does. And for me, the take would have been more interesting had, you know, because the idea that I always had in my brain, if there was going to be a Superman Doctor Who crossover, was that, you know, the Doctor discovers like an anomaly, something wrong with the timeline. And, you know, he journeys through time and he ends up in Metropolis. And like, he's like, wait, there's a city that's here that has never, not supposed to be here. What is this Metropolis? And then he basically discovers that, you know, that a Kryptonian survived, you know, when maybe in his universe, like there was no survivor on Krypton and this is all wrong, you know, and I'm like, you know, and to me, that's the plot that you're sort of like at the races because Superman's like, oh, you're the Doctor and I'm Superman, but we're equals, you know, as opposed to it being sort of like parent, child or, you know, uncle, relative, you know, or mentor, you know, child. So that to me was the sort of thing that was lacking in this episode or what I would really love to see, you know, play out in like a Doctor Who episode, right?
Right. Well, I mean, there have been, you know, there have been, there was a comic book, Star Trek crossover.
Oh, yeah.
That was pretty good with the 11th Doctor, Assimilation Squared, I think it was, or Assimilation 2. And it was the Borg team up with the Cybermen and, you know, havoc ensues. And it was not bad. I wasn't crazy about the artwork, but I thought the story was well done.
So
I'm, you know, I'm not averse to crossovers per se.
Yeah. No, I mean, I just, obviously they have to be done. And, you know, in this one, you couldn't, I think like if you did like a straight Doctor Who, Superman crossover, it would be sort of the more maybe serious thing that you're looking at. But it's obvious that Stephen Moffat, and apparently in one of those interstitial interviews too, Moffat was like, you know, superhero powers are inherently silly. And I'm like, what, a guy in a blue box like traveling through time isn't like, come on, like let's you know, all things being equal, like let's call you know it what it is. So yeah it's just, it's interesting that the sort of comic book aspects or the sort of cheeky sort of again, wink, wink bits of this episode kind of put you off a little bit. And for me, I was like, oh, this is great. You know, so because, I mean, when you think about it, I mean, Superman in and of himself is sort of the sort of genesis of all the superheroic stuff. You know, I mean, not science fiction hero. I mean, you know, for you know, Doctor Who, I think maybe Flash Gordon or Buck Rogers might be maybe a more apt, you know, origin. But, you know, I mean, as far as like the sort of hero that sort of jumps into danger, and I mean, that's been around for a long time. But the guy in tights with the cape, you know, Superman is the origin of that. So I just think it's really nice that they sort of finally did something like that. But again, I would love to see the comics take it on and take it on with a more straightforward, you know, like this is a team up and this is happening and they are equals and they've got a problem to solve, you know, together. And I think I called, like, when I did my thing, I think I called it like the crisis of the Kryptonian conundrum or something like that. You know what I mean?
Right.
So, you know, I just think it would be a really fun thing to play with, that there was this planet that blew up and no one was supposed to survive. And the doctor's like, what are you doing? Like Krypton? Like they're not supposed to be any survivors. And he's like, well, I am one, you know what I mean? And maybe they have to deal with it that way. So,
well, when we are off the horn here, get, you know, pick up the phone and call IDW and see if they'll run with your idea.
Yeah, pitch the thing. I think it's more a function of getting comic book companies to work together these days and use their characters right together, because there's a lot of, I don't know, it seems like, at least with Marvel and DC, they're saying they'll never do it again. But maybe, I know that IDW works with Marvel on a lot of stuff. Who knows? So who knows? It would be great. But
they were the ones who did Assimilation Squared.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, I would imagine. So I should look that up, because that sounds something like really interesting to me to read, because it seems like, even though, you know, the thing with, like, I think they might have even done, I think they did like a Green Lantern Star Trek crossover or something like that. And to me, that's like, how do you do something like that? Because, you know, you've basically got characters that are sort of godlike, right? And then how do you basically, like, I mean, the Enterprise is great and Captain Kirk is great, but they're all still human, right? But I guess they've all dealt with godlike creatures as well on the Enterprise. So it must have been an interesting read. I'll have to see if I can find it in trade paperback.
That's so interesting.
Yeah. In any case, well, I think that you and I mean, we both liked it, right?
Yeah, it was enjoyable. I mean, it's hard for me to say it wasn't.
You're so funny. Yeah, no, I mean, I really...
Remember, I'm the grumpy relative.
Yeah, I know. I mean, I loved it. I loved it for everything that it tried to do. I thought, you know, I don't think it's one of the best Christmas episodes, but I think it was fun. You know, I was engaged the whole time. My daughter actually loved it too, without even getting, you know, any of the superhero references, you know. And I just thought it was kind of like a nice little sort of love letter to comic book fans who, you know, are also happen to be, you know, Doctor Who fans. So I may even watch it again, because I thought it was a lot of fun. So you're right. It is sort of one of the lighter, sort of like puffier episodes, but I like those episodes too, you know, so they don't have to be like all dark and, you know, River Song and oh my God. And you, I know that you like the high drama, and I do too. I love that stuff. You know, I love the weepy, you know, oh my God, sniffle, you know, this is so sad sort of thing, or planets burning, you know. But, you know, every once in a while there's a Doctor Who episode that, you know, reminds me of the fun of it. And right. I definitely had a lot of fun, you know.
It was fun.
That's all you could say. Barry is disappointed. Well, so when does the new season start, Barry? Do you know? Is it in the fall?
I'm not sure, actually. I thought it was April, but maybe not.
Oh, my God. I hope it's sooner rather than later, because it's been too long. I've actually been toying with introducing my daughter to the Peter Capaldi, you know, not Peter Capaldi, what's this? Christopher Eccleston season of The Doctor.
Like, okay.
Getting her, because she has seen some of the trailers for the Matt Smith stuff during BBC America, and she's been like, what is that? Like, that looks amazing. And I'm like, oh, it is. But, you know, there's definitely some episodes where, you know, I don't know that she could handle it. Might be too scary, but, you know.
It is. So, yeah, I'm looking it up. It is coming out. It's a 12-episode series.
Yeah.
And to be coming out, it's going to start April 2017.
They'll probably break it up into two parts like they've done in the past. It'll probably be spring and then fall, right? I would imagine.
No, 12. Well, maybe. Could be.
Yeah. Well, in any case, I loved the 2016. And we forgot to mention that he names the Doctor Mysterio. I mean, the whole title of the episode. Like, you know, if you were a superhero, you would be called Dr. Mysterio. I mean, I thought that was classic. I love that.
And, you know, but that's, and that's what they call, that's what, you know, we in real life call Doctor Who in Mexico, where apparently there's quite a big following. The Spanish of Doctor Who is Dr. Mysterio.
Oh, really? I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Oh, that's interesting. It's all. It also should be noted that Mysterio is a Spider-Man villain. So there's and apparently there is an Easter egg to Spider-Man where they walk by a pizza joint, and the name of the pizza joint is from Spider-Man 2. So that's really interesting. But
One thing I noticed about that Joe's Pizza, by the way, was it looked a lot like the Joe's Pizza on Bleecker and Carmine in real life.
Oh, really?
But I was thinking, like, the first thing I wrote in my notes was, it's supposed to be on the, they put it on the corner. It's in the middle of the block. What are these people doing?
That's funny. Well, and there's also another Spider-Man call out where the doctor says to Grant, like, with great power comes great responsibility.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. That
and
was
I
terrific.
Just love all that stuff. I loved it.
I did cackle at that one.
So I'm a big fan of the Doctor Who Christmas Special 2016. Barry, he's kind of being a Scrooge this year, not so much.
A little lukewarm.
You know, but in any case, we still both love Doctor Who. We're looking forward to the next season. And this has been the Doctor Who Holiday Christmas 2016 episode of Part-Time Fanboy. My name is Christian Horn. I am on the phone with our Doctor Who scholar, Barry Negrin. Thank you for doing this again, Barry. I love having you on.
My pleasure.
Yeah, well, enjoy the rest of your vacation. And everyone who's out there, this will probably air after the first of the year, so I wish you a very pleasant 2017. God knows the apocalypse is on its way, but we're going to try to make the best of it. Hopefully we'll all live to see the next season of Doctor Who. Thank you for listening.
That would be great.
Follow us on Twitter. You know, check us out on Facebook. We have an Instagram. And if you have any questions or requests, you know, be sure to email them to ptf@parttimefanboy.com. Thank you for listening and have a wonderful beginning of 2017. Bye.
Part-time fanboy.